It's at the letters for Monday, February 10th, 2025. Arden Zwelling here with Ben Nicholson Smith. Our producers are Christian Ryan and Nick Ondrod. Thanks to them for their work. Thanks to you for listening. Ben, we did not get to this topic during our podcast last week on purpose because it is a rather lengthy and complex and nuanced conversation. So we wanted to really give it enough time to breathe. And we also wanted to do it this week specifically because this is the week the pitchers and catchers report to Dunedin, Florida. Toronto Blue Jays spring training opens. That means that we are only 7 days away from the first full squad workout of the Blue Jays ahead of the 2025 season, which is the date that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and his representatives have set as the deadline for extension negotiations. After that point, they have said they do not want to talk about it anymore if there has not been an agreement between Vlad and the Toronto Blue Jays to keep him at Rogers Center for many, many years to come. Ben, it may not be hyperbolic at all to say this is one of the most significant weeks in the recent history of the Toronto Blue Jays franchise.
I think that's completely fair because you think about the stakes here for the team, the stakes here for Vlad Jr. We're going to learn a lot about the direction of this franchise in the next 7 days. And either Vladdy is going to be locked up, there's going to be a very happy press conference on Tuesday morning as the Blue Jays announce a long-term deal for a franchise player, or it will be revealed that there was no deal agreed upon and that he is heading for free agency at the age of 26 is how old he'll be when he is scheduled to hit free agency. He would obviously be an extremely coveted player, and while the Blue Jays could theoretically sign him in free agency, this is a clear window right now when they have exclusive rights to sign a guy who's an elite hitter in this sport. So yeah, to say the least, this is a big week for the Jays.
Monday, February 17th, that is the Blue Jays' first full squad workout. That is the day of the deadline. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on just what the particulars are of this artificial deadline, which isn't really tethered to anything concrete other than the fact that the Blue Jays are going to get together and John Schneider is going to give a speech that day. Is the deadline prior to the workout? Is the deadline the second the workout ends? Is the deadline 11:59 p.m. on February 17th? Is there a deadline at all? Or if the Blue Jays came to Vlad's camp on, I don't know, Wednesday, February 19th with exactly what he's looking for, is he going to say, no, I won't sign that. Don't you remember I had a deadline?
We'll see. Sometimes these things take on different twists and turns. But as things stand right now, I'm interpreting it as a real deadline. I think the Blue Jays should treat it that way. And I think they will treat it that way. If they have a really good offer to make, they should make it on the 17th, not on the 19th. You just risk a lot at that point, and they need to be taking this very seriously, and I expect that they are. So my sense is that the 17th is that deadline. So is that at midnight? I expect that if they're well down the road making progress at 11:55, then that's where you probably run into a little gray area, and you could keep negotiating into the night. But if they're significantly apart as the 17th is progressing, I think that's it. Like, I don't think that they're going to, you know, wake up and regroup on the 18th or 19th. At that point, my understanding is that Vlad Jr. wants his focus to be on baseball either way. So he wants to focus on the field and keep the focus between the lines and trying to produce and talking about his performance and not talking about contracts. So I think that it's essentially the 17th, that's the final day on which talks can really occur here.
I do think that if there isn't a deal on the 17th, like there won't be one on the 19th or the 21st or the 24th. But say 5 weeks later, so what, March 24th, so like a little bit more than a month later, essentially right towards the end of spring training, if the two sides, having not made a deal on the 17th, looped back around and kind of said, well, hey, you know what, we were kind of thinking about it, or we ran the numbers again, or like, hey, we kind of moved stuff around, or we had a change of heart or whatever, and they do get, like, they do close that space, that gap between them on March 24th,
Are you telling me like that's just not going to happen? Like they aren't going to both do something that's mutually beneficial? Like that's why I do think that while the deadline will push negotiations this week and force the two sides to the table and to have conversations, nothing changes. There's nothing consequential after the 17th in a literal sense. Like it really is just a completely figurative deadline.
Right. I see where you're going with that. I don't see any pathway where a deal is done in March. Could I imagine at the All-Star break something? Maybe. Like that's where I could sort of stretch my disbelief here a little bit. I don't see it because, you know, in that scenario, who's initiating it? I think the Blue Jays have already run the numbers, and no one's told me this, but if I had to guess, knowing how prepared they are, I would think that they've already run this. They've probably already come up with their, you know, max offer, and they've already probably come up with a few different scenarios that they could present to Vlad Jr. So they've probably been looking at this for months, if not years, to try to come up with what this number should be for Vlad Jr. So I don't think that anything is going to change from their end in the next 5 weeks, and I definitely don't see Vlad and his representatives going back to the Blue Jays in March. I really don't see that happening. So it's hard for me to imagine which side would approach the other in late March, for example.
I will say this, it's a negotiation, and deadlines, whether, you know, arbitrary, artificial, or concrete, consequential, whatever, they do help in negotiations. And I think that they do particularly help when two sides know each other as well as these two sides know each other. Because remember, this is, you know, been the same Blue Jays front office for the last 4 years, and Vlad's had the same representation for the last 4 years.
For the last 10 years.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm narrowing in on the last 4 years because that's when these two sides have negotiated extensively over 4 one-year deals. And one of those had to be sorted out via arbitration. And the three other times the two sides were able to settle on a value that both sides felt was fair or that made sense for both sides considering the circumstances. So those are, you know, hours and days and weeks. And I mean, you know, a thousand DocuSigns worth of negotiations that went on there. And beyond that, they've, you know, within those discussions discussed larger frameworks and longer term deals. And hey, what would you be thinking about? And obviously, like those positions, those negotiating points, they move depending on how Vlad performed the year prior, or depending on like where the Blue Jays organization is positioned financially, depending on COVID and what's happening externally and how that impacts business operations, not only for the Blue Jays, but, you know, across the league and across baseball. And make no mistake, like this is a deal wherever Vlad signs for however much going forward that is consequential to capital B baseball. Like MLB is very invested in the outcome here, because this is the type of contract that can shift markets and that can set precedents and that can impact all kinds of contracts and agreements for players to come afterwards. So what I'm saying here is that like these two sides know each other's negotiation styles very well. They know what makes each other tick. And I think that kind of familiarity, like it can go both ways. It can go one way where it actually makes things smoother and removes a layer of BS and really encourages forthrightness between the sides. But I think it can also produce impasses if one side or the other is maybe harboring some resentment over discussions prior, or grudges, or letting the outcomes of a prior negotiation bleed into this new one, or is being stubborn or anything like that. So I do think that when two sides know each other as well as these two do, that a deadline can be useful.
Yes. And that is why Vlad Jr. has created this deadline. I mean, partly I do think that, you know, there is a real benefit for him to be able to focus on the field. And he's certainly not alone in wanting to be able to do that. But it also just creates, all right, this is the time. If we're going to do it, it's got to be now. And this is part of the reason, too, that there hasn't been credible reporting that there have been active talks in the course of the last, you know, couple, you know, 5-6 weeks in terms of 2025. The reason for that, and the reason that there haven't been like active talks beyond that 1 year agreement that they did through the arbitration process for 2025, is that the deadline is looming. So, you know, if you have the means to make a really strong offer, you're probably not going to make your best offer on January the 23rd or January the 25th. And conversely, if the Blue Jays are making an offer on January the 23rd or 25th, you're probably not going to accept it in that moment, because what if they have a better one on February the 16th or February the 17th at 7 p.m.? So I think that's where, you know, everyone involved in this, my sense is that there's a willingness to wait. There's been ample time to prepare. So on both sides, again, I think the Blue Jays have had the chance to prepare what their best offer or offers can be for Vlad Jr. And he's certainly had time to think this through for himself and to consider different contracts. You know, is it the Juan Soto contract? What does that mean for him? Does Pete Alonso impact him at all? Or is that a totally different discussion? I mean, he's had time to reflect on all this and to determine what the number is that will make sense for him. But this is a relationship, to your earlier point, that goes back a long way. And I would even go beyond those 4 years of the arbitration process to all the way back to 2019 when they first called him up. And he was not a polished player at that point. So, and I've debated this with Ross Atkins at the time, and you know, we've discussed it since then. You know, was he ready? I thought at the time they should have called him up, and that it was, you know, it was bordering on service time manipulation not to call him up at that time. Then Vladdy got up and he, you know, had clearly some room to grow defensively and base running wise and game clock wise. And so I've come to understand that, hey, there were some baseball reasons for wanting to keep him in the minor leagues. But keep in mind, viewed from the standpoint of the Players Association, this was sketchy behavior on the part of the Blue Jays. And the Players Association, from their standpoint, they did not like the way that was handled. Now, there were no grievances that were brought in front of arbitrators on this, but this was something that the PA did not like. So that's also a part of this story for Vlad Jr.
Yeah, I think if anybody actually has a grievance, not like a capital G grievance, but just like a reason to be aggrieved, it's Bo Bichette, because he came up later than Vlad that year in 2019 and didn't get the opportunity to be a Super 2 player, which means, and now this is over the course of 7 years prior, like Bo Bichette's going to have career earnings entering free agency of like, I don't know, 35, 40 mil, and Vlad's going to be over 70. And look, Vlad's a, you know, been a much more productive player and a much higher ceiling talent than Bo, but Bo plays shortstop, which is, you know, a higher value defensive position than Vlad plays. And I think that just looking, like comparing the career earnings of those two guys who both debuted in the same year, but one of them got to be Super 2 and the other one didn't, I think really shows like the vast discrepancy and like the amount of money, like just the difference that could be made via when a player is called up.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. So now we're kind of approaching this standoff, but my interpretation of things is that these sides have had ample time to really ask themselves what it would take, ask themselves what their breaking point is. And I think what's really interesting about this is we don't know, like on both sides, it's possible that ownership at Rogers Communications, which also owns Sportsnet, it's possible that they've said, we really need to extend this guy, just get a deal done. Conversely, it's also possible that Vladdy has said to his representation, get as much as you can from the Jays, but I want to sign. We don't know. And of course, if either one of those things has been said, nobody is going to actually admit that until the last possible moment, or they're probably never going to admit that because you don't want to compromise your own leverage. But this is where they're playing a little bit of a game of chicken here, because it's pretty beneficial for both sides to get a deal done here. In my opinion, viewing it from the outside looking in, I see a lot of reasons that this actually could benefit everybody.
Yeah, there's a lot of chicken going on, particularly when, like with the deadline, you know, there's a real advantage or disadvantage, depending on how it plays out, to being the first mover. You know, to your point, like, yeah, I doubt that there's a lot of conversation going on right now, but by the end of the week, there does have to be a lot of conversation going on. And who moves first, like who makes an offer first, or like who budges from their position first, like that's meaningful.
And yeah, and that has to be the Jays, right? I would think.
I honestly, like, I don't know. I'm not in the room. So yeah. I don't know who's where. I don't know what's happened. Like, I don't know how far either side has moved from the first time that they've talked. So it's impossible for me to say. What I do know is that if I worked in the Blue Jays front office, I wouldn't be making any dinner reservations for Sunday the 16th.
unless they're with Vladdy.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, exactly. I imagine there's going to be pretty substantial conversations going on Sunday night into Monday. Because that's just kind of how things go with a deadline, is that it's like when all of us were in school and we saw the deadline was a week away. Oh, well, I don't have to start that paper until, like, you know, 4 days from now. Like,
yeah.
We just naturally, human nature is just to push things as far as possible. The deadline is probably the one thing that actually gets us started on half the things we do in our lives. But, you know, just so considering that the negotiation at play here, the advantages and disadvantages of when you move, how far you move, what you say, when you say it. You mentioned leverage, and you know that is like one of the most important things in any negotiation, is like who holds leverage. I'll put it to you. Who do you think holds true leverage in this negotiation? Vlad, the Jays, or a little bit of both?
Well, certainly a little bit of both, because the Blue Jays, they have money that gives them power. Clearly, they've been willing to spend $700 million on Shohei Ohtani, $600 million on Juan Soto. I think they have a lot of money available, and Vlad Jr. could be the recipient of that and probably would like to be. He's certainly been consistent in saying that he would be open to signing in Toronto. So for the right price, he would love to be the recipient of that big contract, which gives the Jays a little leverage. But I think most of the leverage belongs to Vladdy, because he's a special player. There just aren't a lot of players who can do what he can do. He's entering his prime, is only 25 years old, about to turn 26. So he should have many, many seasons where he is able to perform at an elite level and do damage against the best pitchers in the world. So those guys are so hard to come by. And he is a step above the, you know, whatever your standard Ryan Mountcastle, Yandy Diaz. You know, he's just a better than your normal first baseman. And he's so young that these types of players are so, so, so rare to come across in Major League Baseball. That, in my opinion, gives him most of the leverage in this.
I do think that at this particular juncture today, Monday, February 10th, 2025, Vlad's in a very good position, because he is coming off of arguably the best season of his career, inarguably at least the second best season of his career. So he's coming off of a high in terms of performance. He's only 1 year from free agency. The Blue Jays franchise is in a position where it doesn't have an obvious internal backfill if he were to leave. It's not like, oh, okay, we've got this other like uber first base prospect who can hit 45 bombs a year and OPS 1,000.
Yeah.
Ready to step in. So like that, it's a pretty big card to hold. Like, hey, if I leave, how are you guys going to be competitive? He's also, or I guess baseball is also coming off of a pretty hot free agent market this winter. And each market is distinct. And just because this winter's market was hot doesn't mean that next year's will. But the recency bias of that is that we all have in our minds that the Mets and the Yankees are spending big now. And, you know, other teams like the Rangers who could get involved in this, you know, there's bidders out there and there's teams with money to spend. This isn't like a cycle of austerity right now in baseball like we had around COVID. I do think that the circumstances are in Vlad's favor, but leverage can change dramatically. And in about 6 to 8 weeks, games are going to start being played in the 2025 season. And if Vlad gets hurt, if he underperforms, if something takes some teams out of next winter's free agent market, like this leverage could shift rather dramatically via external factors, via Vlad's performance, what have you. So there is an argument that it actually makes sense for Vlad to cash in on this leverage now, and that if he doesn't, he is taking a bit of a risk that he will lose that leverage in the coming months.
I agree. And if I was advising Vlad Jr., I would obviously try to get the most out of the Blue Jays that you possibly can. And I would wait until the 16th or 17th and push them hard until then. But end of the day, if they came in with an offer that starts with a 4, you know, it would be hard to say that you should turn this down. It really would. the most recent information that's verifiable is Vlad Jr. himself said that he declined a $340 million extension offer from the Blue Jays. That tells us that probably he's looking for a lot more than that, probably starting with a four, maybe well above that. We don't know. Or I don't know exactly where those figures would be or what it would take for him to say yes to a deal. But clearly 340 is not that number. But yeah, to your point, I think that Vladdy is in a great position, but the best case scenario for him might actually be signing a deal right now. Maybe it has an opt-out in it. Maybe it has some flexibility in the future. Who knows? But if he likes Toronto and if the Blue Jays are offering him a really strong financial offer, this is where it really could be a win-win for everyone involved.
Well, and that's where he and his side have to think about, how much do I stand to gain versus what's presently on the table for me right now, or what I can get right now by going out in 26 on the last year in 2025, excuse me, at 26 in the my last year prior to free agency, and just having another Vladdy-esque season with like a 950 OPS and hitting 35 bombs and going to free agency. Like, how much do I stand to gain by doing that and going to free to market next winter versus what I have now? And then conversely, how much do I stand to lose if I blow out my knee, or if I have a season that looks offensively a lot more like 2023 when he had a 788 OPS, 116 OPS plus, which is, rather pedestrian for a first baseman. I could see circumstances, again, it depends on what's on the table for him, but I could see a circumstance where he actually stands to lose much more than he stands to gain by betting on himself in 2025.
Right. Because if, as you pull an oblique, okay, you miss some time, then does that put him in the situation of getting, maybe it's more of a pillow type deal with some bounce back, with some opt-out options? That's far from a disaster, and he would still be so young as a free agent even after one more year. So he would still be in a good position. He's also had so much success. He's such a confident guy. He doesn't view risk the same way that you and I do. He's already made $70 million in his career, and so he's fine. Like, it's a different story than it is for 99.9% of people, and certainly even 99% of Major League Baseball players. Like, he's just in a different bracket, right? So he can afford to take on risk in a way that others can't. And he's in his prime. He's confident. He's a young guy. He believes in himself. He's been described to me as really, in a good headspace when it comes to all of this, and focused on producing on the field, which is where you want the focus to be at this point. So there is perhaps some downside risk for him, and the upside could be maybe he puts together the best season of his career. There's still a real chance that his best years are ahead of him. And so if he has a 170 WRC plus and 40 homers and the Blue Jays make the playoffs, his leverage will be incredible in 8 or 9 months' time.
Yeah, and he plays like 25 games at third base and looks really good there. Yep. And then sells himself on the market as a first baseman / third baseman. Yeah, like, these things can change a lot. Like, you make a good point. Like, Vlad is exceptional, like, not just among, general population, but among MLB ball players, in that he's going to have $70 million plus of career earnings when he goes into free agency, or if he goes into free agency after this year. The vast majority of MLB players don't make $7 million, let alone $70 million. This is a really unique situation, not even mentioning the fact that his father made a ton of money in this game. And youth being on his side, to your point, means that if 2025 is a disaster for whatever reason, like, he can just go take a Pete Alonso pillow contract very easily. Like, that precedent, like, there's your comp right there. What Alonso just signed for, he can take that pillow deal, go reestablish his value and re-enter the market at 27, 28, right? Still really young for a free agent. And throughout all that, he's still going to be Vladimir Guerrero Jr., which means he's still going to ink endorsements, which means he's still going to have opportunities off the field that other players don't. Like, he is a name more globally than just in Toronto, where obviously everybody knows who he is. Like, he is a brand name in baseball. His father made that name a brand name, and now he is carrying that on. So it is just, he is just so uniquely positioned. It's part of what makes this all so complicated and complex, right? Like, that's what makes this negotiation so nuanced and so interesting. But we have to remember just how quickly things can change. Because I said it, like, after 2023, he had a 116 OPS plus, you know, at this time, a year ago, like 365 days ago, it was not hard to find people who were saying, well, Vlad is merely a very good hitter. He's not a great hitter. You know, he's really just an above average first baseman. He's not an MVP candidate. 2021 is clearly an outlier. Look at the other four seasons of his career where he's been, you know, below an 800 OPS or only a shade above it. Geez, like, you know, we can talk about his expected stats and Arden and Ben can bang on about how he's going to break out and how he's going to be this great hitter. But until his actual stats catch up with them, I'm having a hard time believing it. Maybe there is a reason that he can't get more out of his batted ball metrics. Like, maybe there is a reason he's perpetually registering below his expected numbers based on the quality of contact he makes. This is only a year ago, Ben. So, like, things can change very quickly once games start being played.
Yeah, absolutely. I think also, like, part of the reason that Vladdy has this leverage right now, ironically enough, it's because the team that he's on has disappointed so much.
Sure.
And you have a Blue Jays team that our listeners know it well. I don't have to tell anyone, but it's been a really frustrating few years on the field, especially, right? Where they're just not winning enough. When they have made the playoffs, they've been swept out in the wild card round. It hasn't gone well. And there has been a lot of frustration surrounding this front office. And the discussion publicly is pretty charged. Now, we also know that Mark Shapiro and this front office, they are measured. They are not the type of group that is easily going to be swayed by emotion or by fan sentiment. That's clear. But the fan sentiment, if the Blue Jays don't sign Vlad Jr., is not going to be kind to Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins. You know, it's not going to add tens of millions to an offer or anything like that. But I do think it's a factor here, and it's hard to exactly quantify what it is. But Vladdy's leverage, I think, is bolstered by the fact that this front office isn't particularly popular, and the fans really, really like Vladdy, and they want Vladdy to stay. And if for some reason this deal doesn't get done, it might be viewed by some folks, it probably will be viewed as a failure on the part of that front office. So that's something that Vlad Jr. can actually kind of take advantage of, and probably should, if he's going to try to get the best deal possible for himself.
And yet, if the Blue Jays had signed Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to like a $300 million contract after his 2021 season when he's an MVP finalist, and he had followed that up with his 2022 when he had an 818 OPS and his 2023 when he had a 788, a 116 OPS plus, Mark and Ross would have been getting killed. They might not still be here. Like, that contract would be seen as a complete albatross. And now, of course, I am, like, exercising 2024.
Yeah.
Exactly, right? But after 22 and 23, how do you think that fans would be feeling about that deal? Like, the Jays front office being getting crushed. Same thing, like, if last offseason the Blue Jays had extended Bo Bichette for, like, $300 million coming off of his 2023, which is, like, a 5-win season when he hit 306, got down ballot MVP votes. How do you think people will be looking at that deal today after his 2024? You know, like, it was just a year ago that the fan base was fretting about the possibility of Bo Bichette walking for nothing without an extension. You don't hear too much of that these days. Bo Bichette's in the same position going into this year. This is his walk here.
We're not doing a Bo Bichette podcast.
No, we're not, right? Nobody's talking about, you know, Bo Bichette's pending free agency in the way they're talking about Vlad's because of the recency bias of the seasons that the two just had. But we just have to have a grander perspective than that and remember that it was only 365 days ago that these rules were completely reversed.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. If they do sign him, then there's a chance that this contract will look really good for a while and then look really bad for a while and then look good again. And, you know, because it would have to be such a long-term deal where these things can have a real ebb and flow. I think it's really fascinating for Vlad Jr. It's a massive decision, but also for the front office, this is almost a legacy moment for them, because if they don't sign Vlad Jr., then they'll be known as the front office that let Vlad Jr. go. we'll see if that would lead to a good thing or a bad thing or where it would lead. Probably not good because Vlad Jr. is a really good player. If they do sign Vlad Jr., then okay, that's tied to their legacy for a long time because that would be a monster contract. And it would have a huge impact on what happens next with this team and their competitive direction and what the roster looks like and all those things. You know, if they don't extend him and then they end up, you know, not contending at the deadline and they end up having to contemplate trades and it's a sell-off and they trade Vlad to the Reds in July, like, then that's their legacy. So whichever way, and don't worry, I don't think Vladdy's going to get traded to the Reds, but, you know, whichever way this thing unfolds, the consequences will be significant for the optics around this whole team. Listen to At the Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
So when you're having a negotiation like this, Ben, typically you're looking for anchors just to even get things started, like some sort of a floor and a ceiling, some sort of precedent, some sort of literal tangible thing that you can point to and say, hey, there's a comparable situation. Here's what has happened in the market prior. Here's what is realistic in terms of expectations for value on the player side and in terms of like a reasonable, fair offer of value on the team side. But it's pretty hard to find examples of 26-year-old first basemen who have had like two seasons that were borderline MVP worthy, and then four others that were more sort of just above average first basemen, like very good hitter, but not great hitter seasons. So how do you think that the Blue Jays, Vlad side, go about just anchoring these negotiations and sort of agreeing upon like the football field on which they're going to try to move this ball towards the middle of?
Yeah, it is hard to find good comps here. It really is. I think that it's maybe easier to start by outlining for folks listening some of the stuff that doesn't matter here. And so I would say these years that we're talking about are free agent years. So anything to do with arbitration just doesn't matter anymore. Vladdy's locked in for 2025, 28.5. But otherwise, any arbitration salary, just not relevant. So it's really only about free agent years at this point. I know that'll be obvious to some people listening, but probably worth saying. And I would also add that any contract signed by someone when he's 31 or 32, like Freddie Freeman, when he signed with Los Angeles, you know, he was already into his 30s at that point. Not relevant. It doesn't really matter because Vlad Jr., he's 25 years old. He's turning 26 next month. So he's just so much younger. So, you know, really older dudes, not really relevant here. And I would also say ancient contracts, not relevant. Albert Pujols, Joey Votto, Prince Fielder, that happened too long ago. So those ones aren't really relevant either. I do think that Juan Soto is somewhat relevant, you know, somewhat in the sense that after he signed, you know, I was at the winter meetings at that moment with Shy and having a bunch of conversations with folks. And, you know, certainly people would come up to us and say, man, what's this mean for Vladdy? And is, you know, is Vladdy, Is he gonna get 500 if he hits free agency? You know, what's his ceiling? I think it's vaguely relevant, but Soto's AAV is like 55 million, right?
So what is it? 765 over 15.
Yeah.
So that 51 would work out to 51 million.
Yeah. So I mean, Vladdy's not gonna touch that. It's not gonna be 51 million. So, but that establishes on the high end what he's not gonna get.
I'll let you continue, but like that. To me, like you said, it's somewhat relevant, the Soto deal. I feel like it's pretty irrelevant, just in my opinion. 15 years, 765, none of it deferred. I mean, that's such an outlier. That is such a unicorn deal.
It's relevant in the sense that it establishes the level to which Vladdy is not going to go. You know,
I guess so.
Like yeah. it's a ceiling. It's like a vaulted ceiling. Like it's not even like a regular ceiling. It's like above where he's going to go. He's not going to touch 51 million. I don't think it's going to be 15 years. The total value will not be 765. It won't be close.
Yeah. And I could have picked just any like irrational number then. Right. Like, cause you know, I think the deal could have been informative if it was at all tethered to reality, But like, it's such a completely insane situation with, the fiscal irresponsibility of that deal on the part of Steve Cohen, who doesn't care about fiscal responsibility when it comes to the New York Mets. And even just like that market in and of itself, right, where you've got the two New York teams extremely motivated to bid against one another, each of them behaving at least somewhat more emotionally than rationally. The Yankees, because of how important Soto was to them in 2024 and how much public pressure they were facing, and then the Mets because Steve Cohen's never found something he wanted that he couldn't buy. So like, I just think that entire situation and that contract and the result of it, it's not relevant to me. I think it's just entirely irrational.
Yeah, it's not like, it's not a close comp by any stretch. I think it's like off in the distance as a threshold Vladdy can't get to. But, you know, when you're talking about how big this contract has a chance to be, and we'll dive into, you know, some specifics as far as what we think this actually could look like in a bit here. But the biggest contracts in baseball history, there's a huge gap between number one and number two. Because number one, 765, Juan Soto. Then number two is technically Shohei Ohtani at 700, but we know with all the deferrals, that's actually valued closer to 437, 438 in present day value, right? So that gives you a $300+ million gulf between the biggest contract and the second biggest contract.
That's why I don't think it's relevant, because it's right. Like, yeah, that's a $300 million drop to where Ohtani is.
I gotcha. Yeah. And I think Ohtani is kind of...
And Ohtani's above where Vlad's going to go. Really?
In present dollars?
At $433 million?
I don't know that he's above where Vladdy goes. And this is where it's really interesting, because I think that Vlad Jr. has a chance to get more money than anyone in baseball history except Juan Soto.
Wow. It's a big statement.
It is. And we'll see where it goes. You know, we'll see. Maybe he will get there. Maybe he won't get there. But I think that there is a chance for him to sign the second biggest contract in the history of Major League Baseball.
That would be wild. Because when you, if we can even just pull this back into reality for a second here, like the actual comp, the closest comp is the Rafael Devers deal at 313 over 10. And that was signed in 2023. And I think that Vlad's a better hitter than Devers is.
And Vladdy launches one. Deep left field and gone. It disappears into the Boston night.
But to me, like, I don't think there is a closer comparable than that, although it isn't like a perfect comparable. And you're saying that you think that he could exceed that by $150 million or more.
I think he could exceed, what was Devers' final number?
313 over 10.
I don't know where the final number would be, but I think Vladdy could exceed it by 100. Let's say that.
Like, the largest ever deal signed by an infielder is Manny Machado at 11 years, $350 million.
Yeah.
And you think the Vlad could exceed that by $100 million, even though Machado's a shortstop third baseman and Vlad's a first baseman.
We'll get to some specifics in a sec here, but I actually think the best comp in some ways is Aaron Judge, because Aaron Judge, for his free agent years, is getting paid $40 million. And I think that's kind of a more realistic neighborhood for the salary of Vlad Jr. for his free agent years, where you're looking not at $51 million. I agree, Soto. No, we're not talking about that. But Devers, for his free agent years, he's getting like 33-31 per season. I actually think that's pretty low. When you look at, you know, that's pretty much what Vladdy's making through arbitration. Christian Walker just signed for $60 million. Like, I think that Aaron Judge, $40 million, that's a more realistic anchor. And Judge is getting that money until his age 39 season. So I don't think Vladdy's going to get paid until he's 39, but I do think that $40 million per season for the free agent years, I think that's a neighborhood that makes sense.
But Judge is a better hitter than Vladdy, and he plays center field. So to me, 40 is too high for Vlad. Francisco Lindor, who's a shortstop, signed at 28 by the Mets, is like a $34 million AAV.
I hear you. If the Blue Jays sign Vlad Jr., it's not going to be like a bargain deal.
I'm not looking for a bargain deal. I don't think Francisco Lindor has a bargain deal.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I think Shohei Ohtani's underpaid by a lot. Like, I think Shohei Ohtani's underpaid. I think that Aaron Judge is arguably underpaid.
Francisco Lindor signed for $341 million over 10 years. Like, I don't think that's a bargain, but I also think that's a guy who, he had a 138 OPS plus last year and plays shortstop.
So let me ask you this then. If you're the Blue Jays and you're trying to sign Vladdy for a $35 million free agent AAV, is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, how are you going to pitch him on that though?
You're making 28.5 right now. This yeah. is a $7.5 million raise. What the highest deal ever signed by a first baseman was what? It's got to be Olson, right? Matt Olson at 168 over eight. He signed that when he was 27.
I mean, Pujols and Prince, like those guys were up at Joey Votto. Those guys were up over 200 million when they signed their deals.
I mean, recent. Do you consider Bryce a first baseman? I mean, no. He signed when he was an outfielder.
Yeah, so I wouldn't consider that as a first base deal. Yeah. So I have some of the data here as far as what first basemen and just some general sluggers did from their age 27 season onward. And I started with age 27 because Vladdy's already signed through his age 26 season. So age 27 and beyond, those are the free agent years. So Ryan Howard, 0.6 war per season starting at age 27. He actually this is wild, Arden. So
Jesus.
Ryan Howard, for that decade, he averaged 30 bombs per season. He had an 826 OPS after his age 27 season, but so bad defensively, I guess, that he was only worth 0.6 war per season.
Well, in that era, too, there were a lot more. I mean, like, it wasn't that crazy to hit 25 to 30 bombs.
That's right. That's a good point. And he just kept playing. They kept giving him playing time long after he was deserving of it because of his, I guess, you know, what he had done, the pedigree that he'd done in Philadelphia. So they kept playing him and he was hitting 20 homers with like a 90 WRC plus and bad defense, but they would play him.
And he wasn't a guy who really took his walks, if I remember correctly.
That's
so, like,
right.
His OBPs would have been like flirting with 300. So he was really super one-dimensional. It was just your 30 bombs. Like, that's all you were paying for.
Empty power. Yeah. Chris Davis, same thing. Chris Davis, 1.6 war per season after that age 27. Prince Fielder's a guy who controlled the strike zone a lot better and was probably a better overall hitter, a better pure hitter than someone like Chris Davis. But even Prince Fielder, he ran into injuries. That was 1.9 war per season. And injuries shortened his career. So these are like the bad outcomes. If you're the Blue Jays, this is like the nightmare scenario that you want to avoid. But the good news is there are actually a lot of players who, for their age 27 to 36 decade, which would be the decade that the Blue Jays are looking to lock up here, they were amazing. Like, if you look at a Joey Votto, Paul Goldschmidt, Freddie Freeman, Albert Pujols, if you think that Vlad Jr. can keep pace with those guys, all of those players averaged 4.6 to 5.5 war per season. So they were essentially five war players, all of those guys, for a decade, 50 war. Like, that's the dream if you're the Blue Jays, is you sign Vladdy, he gives you 50 war in the next decade, and you're winning, you know, some pennants, you're winning maybe a World Series in that period of time. That's the kind of deal that you would hope this becomes.
And I'll say this in Vlad's defense, and it's like so hard to quantify this or to put a number on it, but there are certain soft skills that he possesses that ought to age well. And that is, you know, like you said, strike zone management, understanding what pitchers are trying to do to him, a seemingly preternatural ability to get his barrel to the ball, even when he was just like hitting everything directly into the Rogers Center turf. The contact quality was always incredible. Like, he does just, there just seems to be something in his eyes and his hands that allows him to just innately be better at barreling baseballs than mere mortals. And it doesn't really make sense why. Like, it's just like, it's just an innate thing. Like, it's just completely intangible. But he seems to have those soft skills, and it seems like those skills would transfer well later into his baseball playing years as his bat speed inevitably declines and as his physicality inevitably starts to go away. Like, I don't know how you quantify that. I don't know how you value it or factor it into a negotiation, but that is one thing that ought to allow him to age better as a hitter, I think, than some of your kind of stiffer sluggers of past, like your Ryan Howards and Chris Davises.
Yes, exactly. I think that Vladdy is truly just a better, a more complete hitter than those guys ever were. And I think that our understanding collectively of what makes players good has improved since then. Chris Davis, if he was around now, he would never have gotten the massive deal that he got. He would be out there with, you know, Pete Alonso signing pillow contracts. Same with Ryan Howard. He probably wouldn't have gotten the big contracts that he got, especially at the age that those guys were hitting free agency, maybe 30, 31. They're still getting these big contracts. Vladdy is a better hitter than those guys, and he is so much younger. So his best seasons conceivably are ahead of him. Which is why we're even entertaining this discussion of hundreds of millions of dollars for a first baseman. There's no way. If he's 32, we're not having this discussion. It's 5 minutes on a podcast. It's not like a dedicated, you know, franchise-altering sort of discussion here. But because he has that combination of elite bat speed, amazing as exit velocities, great control of the strike zone, all of the and performance proven against really good pitchers for multiple years, this is where he has this leverage.
And I think his ability to like adjust within plate appearances, get his barrel to pitches all around the strike zone, understand what pitchers are trying to do to him, like that sort of stuff ought to age really well. Like it's, you know, you talk to people throughout the game and they say Vlad's just the most innately talented hitter they've ever seen.
Fastball hit well right field. O'Hearn going back, leaps at the wall, it's gone! His 10th homer in the 20-game streak puts the Blue Jays...
Again, it's just not something that there's a stat for on Fangraphs. It's just like one of those sort of like old school boomer things where it's like, no, I know it when I see it. And everybody within baseball tells you they know it when they see it with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Let me throw this one comp at you and let me know what you think of this. And this is purely offensive because they play different positions. But offensively, Bryce Harper through his first six seasons hit 285. Vlad through his first six is hitting 288. Bryce had a 386 OBP. Vlad has a 363. Harper's slug was 515. Vlad's is 500. Harper had 150 bombs. Vlad is 160. Harper had a 140 OPS plus through his first six seasons. Vlad has a 137. I have a hard time finding a better offense purely comp through the first six seasons of a career than Bryce Harper, and it helps that the ages overlap perfectly as well.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that's totally fair. And if Vladdy's career progresses the way Bryce Harper's has, then whoever signs Vlad Jr. will be very happy.
And Harper signed for 13 years, $330 million with the Phillies in 2019 as an outfielder then. He has since become a first baseman. And, you know, Harper's first seven seasons, like, you could argue they were somewhat underwhelming, just relevant to the amount of hype surrounding him, I guess, upon his debut, with the exception of, like, 2015 when he was, like, he ran away with the NL MVP award. It's somewhat similar to Vlad, where his first six seasons maybe somewhat underwhelming relevant to the amount of hype around him, with 2021 being his peak year where he just like went gangbusters. The thing with Bryce is at 26, he turned a corner and never looked back in terms of consistency. Like he just raised his game and the consistency of his offensive production to a point where it was like year after year after year, he was Bryce Harper, and he's now well on his way to the Hall of Fame. I think it's the big question with Vlad is whether he can find that consistency. Like he doesn't have to be like 2021 Vlad every year. Like that Vlad was, you know, gangbusters, 48 bombs, over 1,000 OPS. But last year's Vladimir Guerrero Jr., 940 OPS, 30 homers. Like if that's sort of his standard, if he can do that year over year over year going forward, he could be Bryce Harper and he can totally come through on like a $350, $400 million deal and give you decent value on that if he can find that consistency. The problem to this point through his first 6 years is he hasn't had that consistency. Four of his six MLB seasons have merely been above average for a first baseman. They haven't been great like Bryce Harper is great right now. So like, that's the big question to me, is whether he can find that consistency or whether we're going to continue to see years like 22 and 23 where he was merely above average.
Yeah, I think that's a fair read on the situation. And I think this is why you make Vlad Jr. a super strong offer, because you don't know if he can become Bryce Harper or if he can put himself or stay on a Hall of Fame track, but you don't get to find out unless you pay him. If you don't pay him, then it's the Arizona Diamondbacks or the Texas Rangers who signed Vlad Jr. at the winter meetings next year, and you're sitting there looking on and wondering what you can do to fill out your lineup with, you know, Ernie Clement and Joey Loperfido and hoping for the best. Like, the only way that you have this Hall of Fame talent through his prime years is if you make him a monster offer in the next 7 days. And so, yeah, it's high stakes stuff. And, you know, I guess there is a backdoor to this where the Blue Jays could not extend him. They could have him hit free agency, and then they could bid against the Red Sox and the Mets and whoever else happens to be, you know, spending big at that moment in time, and sign him then, as the Yankees did with Aaron Judge. So that's possible. But I think this window right now is really prime time, because it's nice to do it when you only have that one team. You're not going up against anybody else trying to sign him.
I think that the Rangers are a real dark horse in this. They don't get talked about a lot, but their first baseman's Jake Berger. And so they have a real opening at first base for 2026 if they want to go ahead and splash the money of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and bring him back to the place where his father also played. But here's the other thing, right? Jake Berger, I think, is informative in another way. In 2023, Jake Berger had a 119 OPS plus. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. had a 116. So if Vlad's going to have any more 116 OPS plus seasons like he did in 23 or in 2020 when he's a 115 OPS plus, then he simply is not generational. Like Mark Spiro's right. Like, he simply is not that guy, and the Blue Jays will likely rue the contract that they signed him to if it starts with a four or is in the high threes. Like, this is the tricky thing about Vlad being a first baseman, and this is where things differ from the Harper comp for me, is that as a first baseman, like, if you're a 140 or higher OPS plus guy, okay, you're a star. You're Freddie Freeman. You're Bryce Harper. But if you're like 120 OPS plus, you're Jake Berger. You're Christian Walker. You're Pete Alonso. Yandy Diaz, Josh Naylor, right? Like, you're just pretty ordinary for the position. So like, which of those poles is Vlad going to be closer to going forward, the 120 or the 140 plus? Because we've seen both throughout his career. You know, you can't just look at 2024 and assume he's going to be that guy forever, because if you looked at 2023 and assumed he was going to be that guy forever, you would have been very wrong 12 months later. So it really is just like, which is he? Is he the 2021-2024 Vlad, or is he the 2022 and 2023 Vlad? Because like, there are vastly disparate values for those two classes of first baseman.
That's right. And, you know, there's maybe room in between that for things to kind of settle into maybe a more balanced place. If you look at what his dad did from those age 27 to 36 seasons, he averaged 3.5 war per season during that stretch. David Ortiz, who obviously DH, so no defensive value, David Ortiz was 3.7 war for those same ages. So if Vladdy were to produce 3.5, 3.7 war per season for the next decade, that would not necessarily be the most, you know, exciting outcome, nor would it be the worst case scenario. And that's where, you know, on a dollars per war basis, if he's making, let's call it $40 million per season, then you're in the neighborhood of, you know, factoring in some inflation and expecting that the cost of a win will go up in free agency. You're probably okay with that if he were able to deliver that kind of production year after year.
Give me that war stat again. Was that three war?
So this is for Vlad Guerrero Sr., 3.5 right. war per season, age 27 to 36. David Ortiz, same years, 3.7 war per season.
I feel like you can find that on the open market, though. I feel like you can go sign Christian Walker or Pete Alonso, right? I feel like you can sign Rhys Hoskins or do what the Yankees have done with Anthony Rizzo the last few years. Like, I feel like 3.5 isn't good enough for a player whose value is all tied up in his offense. Like, if he was giving me some base running and some defense as well, okay, but he's not. Like, it's all offense, so I'd need the WAR total to be higher than that. Otherwise, I'm just going to trade for Josh Naylor.
And I think that no one would be thrilled if that's the way things played out. And if he settled into being, you know, a very good offensive player who's not transformative, who's not finishing top five in MVP votes, then you're not thrilled with the result of that. But you can live with it. You know, that's, you're still getting production. It's still a good player. And if that's the downside, then that's something that I think a major league front office could be comfortable with. But here's the thing. If you want to have a shot at an 8-WAR player, it's someone who can take Emmanuel Class A deep in the ALCS. It's someone who can, you know, take an MVP award away from Aaron Judge or away from Gunnar Henderson. To have any chance at that type of player, you got to spend at a certain point or develop them. And of course, you know, the Blue Jays are hoping they can turn Aurelvis Martinez into that guy too, or draft them. Maybe it's Arjun Namala in a few years, who's a 6-WAR shortstop. You of course work to do it on those fronts too. But sometimes, you know, you can flex your financial muscle, which they have, and they've shown a willingness to do. Now they have this homegrown star. I think that to give yourself the chance at Vlad Jr., age 29, putting together a 45 homer season and, you know, homering off of Grayson Rodriguez to send the Blue Jays to the World Series, like, this is the kind of player that can do that. And I think that now is a chance to spend. And this is where I think the Blue Jays should be very motivated to extend him.
This is why it's so complicated and so complex, right? And this is why it's got to be so hard to project him and to negotiate going forward. Is that unknown? Is the various possible outcomes? Is, you know, like, to your point, right? Like, we're having a conversation here where we're throwing around like Shohei Ohtani as a comp and yeah, Aaron Judge as a comp, right?
And like, Jake Berger.
Yeah, and Jake, all relevantly, right? Like, it all, like, all can be fairly measured in here. But like, when we're talking about Ohtani and Judge and you know, we had Soto in here, like, you know, you could throw in Mike Trout, right? Who's what, 426.5 is kind of the total value of his deal with the Angels. We're talking about Hall of Famers, you know, like, we're talking about the highest paid players in the game. If Vlad signs a contract that begins with a 4, that's going to be one of the 4 largest contracts in the history of the sport.
Yeah. He is on a Hall of Fame track, right? I mean, I think that's pretty clear. And to me, there's no question he's generational. It's not a doubt. No doubt in my mind. This is a generational player.
I mean, 116 OPS plus in 2023 and 115 in 2020, that's not particularly generational to me for a first baseman.
But honestly, he's 25. He's 25 years old, though.
If I just sliced out the 2021 and the 2024, I would say, yeah, absolutely, he's generational.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you sliced out your 2 best years of your career, then, oh, you know, it's not going to look as good either, right?
Let's, like, not go down that road.
you take away my 2 best articles, and I got nothing, you know? Like,
So let me put it this way. I think Vlad could be a Hall of Famer and could be generational. It depends if he can be more consistent going forward. If he continues, you know, because look, the last 4 years, he's had 2 great years and 2, you know, good years. So if he keeps trading those off back and forth, he's not in the same class as a Soto, a Trout, an Ohtani, a Judge, who put up these like 6-7 win seasons year after year after year.
I think that's fair. And Ohtani, I mean, Ohtani might be the best player we've ever seen. I don't think Vladdy's that. I don't think Vladdy is Willie Mays. I don't think that he is Ted Williams. I think that's pretty clear. But could he be like Eddie Murray level? You know, could he be Carlos Delgado level? I know Carlos Delgado's not in the Hall of Fame. Could he be Jim Thome level? Like, there are really, really good players out there who aren't necessarily the inner circle, the all-time Mickey Mantle. I'm not saying he's Mickey Mantle. Clearly he's not, but he's got 21.5 WAR at 25 years old. Like, he's on track to go well beyond 60 in his career, which is kind of the Hall of Fame benchmark. Yeah, like, I think he's on a Hall of Fame path. And, you know, maybe it's, yeah, you know, I just, I don't think he's Tino Martinez. I think that he's like a lot better than your all-star player, you know?
That's another name I didn't expect to enter this conversation.
Nor did I. I don't know where that came from. I don't know.
All right. So let me say this then. Considering Vlad's justified high demands, based on what you're saying, based on his youth, based on the track, based on the season that he just had, but also considering some justified concerns on the Blue Jays side based on the inconsistency of his career, the body type, like how, you know, the one-dimensional nature of his production being only offense, the fact that no matter what happens, the speed and the defense are unlikely to get much better from here. They can only really go down. I think it's going to be very hard for the two sides to find like one clear value with an equal annual salary over 10 to 12 years that they're both comfortable with. Like, I think it is much more likely this contract contains opt-outs, deferrals, escalators, bonuses, different salaries, you know, earlier and later, depending on where the opt-outs are, whether you're front-loading it or back-loading it. Like, I think that the two sides have to get very creative in order to arrive at a place where this makes sense for both, just based on the fact that they, you know, I think that the demands on one side, the concerns on the other are both justified.
This is where, and no one's crying tears for Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins here, okay? But it's a really difficult sort of situation because it's not going to be easy to find a hitter as good as Vlad Jr. if he leaves, but, you know, do you just do a blank check? I don't know. I mean, honestly, when I look at this situation too, I think there are so many more of the good scenarios for the Blue Jays just end with Vlad Jr. being extended in the next week. I just think that's the better outcome. So I don't know where it's going to go. And I'm not sitting here making predictions on what the outcome will be, but I think that both sides can gain from an extension. I think it can be advantageous for everyone involved, and it can really be a win-win, which is what you want here. And I think that pathway exists for everyone to be happy, for the Blue Jays to get an amazing player, and for that amazing player to be compensated very, very well.
Yeah, I think both sides want the same outcome. And I think both sides want something that's going to look like a partnership going forward. I think it's just what's the shape of that outcome. Like, this is not a simple, straightforward negotiation.
No.
Considering the wildly disparate comps that are out there, and even the with a lot of these comps, like, there has been inflation since, not only because of like the Ohtani Soto deals, but also just due to time passing and revenues continuing to go up in the game,
new CBA, all this stuff.
Exactly. So a new media environment, etc. So like, I could imagine there being a gap. And one thing that, you know, the Blue Jays used to broach a gap with Anthony Santander was deferrals. And like, I don't have any insight as to how open Vladimir Guerrero Jr. would be or not to deferrals. But like, if Vlad needs something that starts with a four and the Blue Jays aren't willing to go there, they're only willing to go to the 350 or whatever, like, you can broach that gap and give them a contract value that starts with a four. It's just going to be in $20-$40 or whatever due to the deferrals. Like, that's what happened to Shohei Ohtani. He got a contract value that, you know, starts with a seven, but as we've been saying, like, it's really more like 433. So I wonder if there is something similar that can happen there so that that gap can be closed, and Vlad can get the number that he and his representatives are after.
Yes, I think that's a really interesting variable here. If you're the team, I think push it, of course, like, go down that path. It's great for the team. It's a great lever to pull on, as we discussed last episode. So absolutely, you can kind of inflate the number that people see, but if it doesn't impact your bottom line, if it doesn't impact your luxury tax, you know, thresholds, you're good to go. So I think that's a great idea. But I also think if you're the Blue Jays, you need to be prepared for the possibility that Vlad Jr. just doesn't want deferrals. And unlike Santander, he has more leverage right now. He's younger. He's a better hitter. You might not be able to get those deferrals past him. He might not be as eager to take them. And then that's where it really becomes tough, because what's your present day no deferrals number that you're willing to offer? And that's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, there isn't much in it for players with deferrals other than tax savings, which is more relevant in Toronto than it would be for the Rangers. But, you know, I think the part of the sales pitch for the Blue Jays also would have to be like, look, these deferrals are going to lower our CBT hit and allow us to build better teams around you because we want you to win multiple rings over the next 10 to 12 years. So help us help you further enshrine your Hall of Fame case with some World Series titles on your baseball reference page.
I like that.
Right. One other interesting variable here is just like the spending of the Toronto Blue Jays organization in recent years in general. When you look at $100 million in Dunedin and $400 million on Rogers Center and $250 million on payroll this year, over $200 million each of the last 2 years, like we're talking about over $1 billion of investment into this team in a like uniquely disadvantageous economic environment for the last few years. When you think about like a weak Canadian dollar and COVID, like kiboshing 2 years of revenue, record inflation and higher interest rates and cord cutting, et cetera, right? Like Mark Shapiro at times has been very forthright in saying that spending has outpaced revenue in recent years. And ownership has just continued investing and piling money into the Blue Jays ship, and even like in some pursuits that didn't come through, like Ohtani and Soto and Burns and Sasaki. You know, like there's the Blue Jays have not been hesitant to spend money. So really, when you have this willingness to spend like never before, if you're going to spend so lavishly on literally every other part of the organization, maybe they all of a sudden aren't like austere when it comes to a homegrown star. Maybe it is. Yeah. Okay. We'll give Vlad $400+ million because this is just how we're investing in this club. Like it would be a little bit weird to spend that aggressively on everything else, but like the actual literal product that is Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Yeah, I agree with that. It would be a little bit weird. This is what it's all in the service of. You want to have these facilities. You want to have this stadium to showcase the players, to get the most out of the players. And Vladdy is as exciting as it gets. He's a young star. He's a superstar in this game. I mean, you obviously you and I are on the road with the Jays a lot, Arden, and you see the way fans know him and respond to him all over the place, right? Wherever the Blue Jays go, everyone knows who Vlad Jr. is. Do they necessarily recognize, you know, Ryan Burr? Maybe not, but they know who Vlad Guerrero Jr. is. So not that that's going to be a driving force behind this, but it just, it goes to show that this is, yeah, it's a huge moment. So I'm going to be really fascinated. The Blue Jays have been pretty buttoned up about this. You know, anytime that we've asked them, asked Ross Atkins about this in the course of the last, well, couple years, really, you know, he doesn't discuss this publicly. And what we know is that Vlad Jr. has said he wants to stay in Toronto. He's very open to that. And yet, so far the offers haven't been to where he would accept them. So, clearly there's some ground to cover there.
And it all comes down to this, Ben. We have debated this, from every angle that we possibly can. It is now time for us to make a decision. In separate realities, we are representing the Blue Jays front office. We have to make an offer to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at some point in the next 7 days. What kind of an offer would you be making Vlad and his representatives this week if you were the Blue Jays front office?
I would offer him the second biggest contract in baseball history. And the offer would come in on Saturday afternoon. This would not necessarily be the final offer, but it would be designed to get things close. And essentially what we're talking about here is because he's already locked in for this year at 28.5, we're talking about starting with 2026 for you know, essentially what the free agent years are. And for that next decade of time, I would offer him an AAV of $41 million to get to 410 for that decade. You add on your 28.5, that's taking you close to 440. Maybe you round it out with a buyout, a signing bonus, something to push it, make sure it's beyond the Shohei Ohtani 438. Maybe your final number there is 444 over 11 years. That to me would take Vladdy through his age 36 season. Maybe there's a club option there at the end. You know, you could figure out the details, but essentially you're looking at $41 million per free agent year 10 free agent years, total number 444. I think that that would get a real discussion going.
So I wouldn't be quite that aggressive. And I, you know, I've made the case in both directions throughout this podcast. But while I am going over 400, as reticent as I would be, honestly, to do that, I'm going to go over 400. I think it's important. I think that I need to show him that I am serious and that I am going to give him something that is symbolic, and that is like meaningful and that matters and that recognizes his special place in this game. With 2025 being locked in at 28.5, this is starting in 2026. I'm going to offer him $401.5 million over 11 years. That is 36.5 AAV through the age of 37.
Yeah. And then you add on your 28, you're looking at what, 430 total? Like, that's a massive, massive number. That would be hard to walk away from.
That is Ohtani money, essentially.
Yeah.
If you add in that 28.5, that is 5 million more a season than Devers, which is, you know, the closest comp. It's the fourth largest deal in baseball history. If you include the arbitration number, it's the third largest in baseball history. So that puts him like right up there with Soto and Ohtani. Like I said, it starts with a four, which is like entirely symbolic, but you know, I think it's meaningful. It takes you through the age of 37 as a first baseman. It blows away the highest overall value for a first baseman ever. And it's, you know, 36.5 is a significant raise on the 28.5 that he's making this year. You know, yeah. A $36.5 million AAV as a first baseman. Like, I'm going to need the other side to admit that that is a very generous offer.
Yeah, it's a really good offer. I mean, I think no one's doing anyone any favors here. It's business, and the Blue Jays, if they can get Vladdy locked up, like that is a partnership. He's not doing them a favor. That's something that really should benefit everyone. But I think our offers are actually pretty similar as far as, and we did this blind, just, you know, for anyone who's listening. We were not, you know, comparing notes as we were coming up with this. I think those are two pretty legit, strong offers. Like, for me, my reasoning as far as wanting to go just beyond Ohtani is, it's maybe $10 million total at that point, but then you're saying you're the second biggest contract ever. It's only Soto who's beyond that. I mean, optically, that might just nudge things forward a little bit. And over the course of a contract that's more than a decade in duration, you can kind of absorb that extra money. And again, if Vladdy said no, I absolutely need to go to X, I would be open to continuing that conversation. For me, that wouldn't be a hard number, but it's a massive one. It's absolutely, like, it's a huge number when you think about all the great players in baseball history, especially recent history, who have signed some deals that are not at this threshold. But I can really see the case for it, and I think it's super fascinating. We'll know within a week what that final number was, right?
What are we going to talk about when this is all over? Where do we go from here?
Yeah,
we got to talk about how Miles Straw is going to be the opening day center fielder.
Well, I don't know if it's going to come to that, but yeah, this is a big one. It really is.
We got to talk about whether Will Wagner can, you know, give the Blue Jays 3 wins this year.
That we probably will talk about.
Right. We're going to talk about Ernie Clement, everyday third baseman. We're going to talk about whether, you know, Nathan Lucas has a spot on this roster.
Yes. And even though we say every year that we won't do it, we'll probably predict some position player battles and try to break down that final spot on the roster as well.
Yeah, that's right. Well, look, at least a week from now, we will be talking about either these two sides not having arrived at a deal and like the massive implications of that, or we'll be talking about like what will be probably a pretty epic press conference if they do sign this thing, where, you know, I'm envisioning like a stage.
Or if they don't.
Right. Well, that, you know, that's the other outcome. But if they do, I don't think they'll have a press conference to say we have not signed Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I think that if they do, they will. I'm envisioning kind of a stage like on one of those fields in Dunedin, right? You don't get a lot of rain this time of year. You could do it outside. Big stage. You got Vlad up there. You got his reps. You got Mark Shapiro, Ross Atkins. You probably got Edward Rogers up there. Big Blue Jay signage in the background. All the chairs set up. You got all the national media types there. Every camera and, you know, every TV station, Sportsnet's going to halt all coverage of every other sport. cut into, I don't care what Four Nations game is being played, we're going to be carrying it live. Just a massive crush of humanity on one of those fields in Dunedin as Ross Atkins puts that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Jersey on him, and Blue Jays fans rejoice across the nation.
It would be a big moment. I mean, there are Jays fans who have been wondering for a long time if this is going to happen, and now we have a clear date. It actually gives us a, you know, very clear time frame for this. I think Jays fans would be really happy if this actually comes to fruition. So stay tuned. It'll be an interesting week.
One of two outcomes. We shall see. Want to thank our producers, Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade, for all their work on this podcast. Want to thank all of you for listening. We're going to be back next week to talk about something we just don't know quite what yet. For Ben Nicholson-Smith, I'm Arden Zwelling. This has been At the Letters.